Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We're continuing our run through of Star Trek Discovery. Right now, we're up to the 12th episode of the second season. It's called Through the Valley of Shadows. It aired on April 4th, 2019. It was written by Bo-Yeon Kim and Erica Lippold, directed by Doug Arniukoski, I think is how you pronounce his name, in this episode. A fourth signal leads the USS Discovery to an insular world where Pike is forced to make a life-changing choice. Burnham and Spock investigate a Section 31 ship gone rogue, leading to a discovery with catastrophic consequences. We're joined by Clay, as always. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I like that Spock's away mission uniform is apparently like the same thing he wears out to Studio 54.
A lot of...
He's got his chest hair going. He's got his like shirt open a little bit. And he's just like, the most logical outcome is that I tap that ass.
There's a lot of... men hitting up the town fashion in Star Trek Discovery.
They haven't maybe he was getting ready to go out with Culber from the couple episodes ago when they just both got, you know, jazzed up, but then Culber had to stay and he's like, I have no wingman now.
It is illogical to try to tame some strange without a wingman.
Would Spock be the wingman in that situation? Like, is he a better wingman, or do you think he needs someone to wingman for him?
He's probably the better wingman, I would think, right? He's going to make anyone else seem better by comparison, I suppose. Just like anyone talking to Spock is going to immediately go to his warmer, more emotional compatriot, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We've got Through the Valley of Shadows, or whatever we're talking about here. We're going to be talking about Pike's sacrifice. We're going to be talking about Proto-Borg. And I think that we might have a few other things to talk about. So let's take a break. Me and Clay are going to come back in a few seconds after we play this clip, and we're going to break the episode down.
Even if a crystal is revealed to you, even if it provides you with the answers you seek, you are not strong enough to accept them.
I'm only asking for a chance to prove it.
They enter with conviction, always. They leave broken, always.
I'm not leaving here without that crystal.
Time will tell.
All right, Clay. So, What did you think of Through the Valley of Shadows, which I think we have two episodes left after this one. So this is not quite the penultimate, but we've got a little bit of time left, and it would seem like we're moving towards the final confrontation here at the end of this episode. But what did you think of it in broad strokes?
Well, I would like to start... excuse me. By saying, I now officially hate the Culber storyline. I had a lot of high hopes, and I was giving it a lot of passes a couple episodes ago, but now I am on your side. I thought that stuff was terrible.
Just the lunchroom scene? Or the one with Tig Notaro, I guess, is what the
both of them. Yeah, I just... anything interesting that they were doing... Now it feels to me like what you were saying when we were arguing about it previously, where it's just... It's just a breakup. It's not anything special. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whatever.
let's start with that one, I guess, to get it out of the way. It is kind of just a breakup, right? It's like a high school version of some sort of breakup where the show is not really interested in examining what it means for Culber to be a new person at this point. Yeah. And he also... Mm-hmm. The understanding of the ending with Tig Notaro's character is that... He's not a different person because he can be convinced to go back to Stamets if that's what he does. That's what the end of that conversation seems to imply to me.
Yeah, he doesn't stand up for himself at all. He's just sort of like, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, honestly, the way that scene should have ended, if they wanted to be true to his character, would be, you know, have him listen to what she says and then be like, listen, I appreciate what you're saying, but it's not that easy. I'm not the same person, and it's not a matter of me just, you know, sucking it up and, you know, giving it a shot. I'm a different person, and I just can't do that.
Yeah.
But they have clearly thrown that out the window. And it's just like a, you know, love the one you're with, I guess.
Yeah, a pointless little like side journey or something, I guess. And it yeah. What I thought came across the weirdest in that is like it continues the I'm thinking of the mess hall scene where it continues the you don't really know these other characters on the bridge at all, mm-hmm. and so a scene that includes them, they're really just background people in it. Yeah. Where mm-hmm. Tig Notaro is talking to Stamets in the front of the frame, and everyone else in the background is just kind of there to provide context, and they're playing some silly game, and they're doing like nothing. But he doesn't have a conversation with people that you would imagine are his friends about this. He has this guest star character come in to talk to him about it, and it just goes to show how uncharacterized a lot of those characters are, and like they don't bring them in any kind of way that could provide any sort of meaning. Instead, they rely on the fact that Tig Notaro is homosexual, isn't she? I think she is.
Yes. Yeah.
So they rely on this sort of like, it's almost like, did they cast her because of that? Is that the reason that she's cast, because she's going to play this role? I was imagining that she was doing a good enough job where that wasn't going to be the case, but it pulled me out of the episode so much that it was her that was talking to him about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would like to assume that's not why they cast her. Because I mean that scene still works regardless of sexual orientation. I mean it's the same sentiment, you know.
No, but if they had cast I don't know. I guess I don't really know what I was thinking. Like the reason it was problematic to me, I guess, is because that actress in real life, her personal life seeming to bleed into the show, felt like it was a weirdly like hands-on approach to what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Like it was so blunt about it that I didn't know why they felt the need to really do that, I guess. And I would have preferred just one of the other characters on the show talk about it, maybe, to make it seem like it was a person that, you know, like I don't know what Tilly's up to this entire time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what something like, she seems to be good friends with Stamets. Instead, it's this character that he's been antagonistic with for a while, brings it up to him, and then talks to Culber about it. It just felt weird to me. It felt unnecessary.
Well, my point is that geez, excuse me. That talk that she has with Culber, it doesn't matter who does that talk as far as like the content of it. Like if you used, I don't know, who's the redhead? I forget.
Detmer, yeah.
If you used Detmer, and then she talks about her husband. I mean, it's the same story.
It is, yeah.
So I would like to assume that it was just a matter of they had Tig Notaro. They wanted to use her for that scene, and then that's the way they chose to go with it, versus they cast her specifically so they could have her talk about her dead wife, you know, episodes later.
Mm.
I think it was probably just a matter of we have her, we'd like to use her, let's put her in a scene, let's put her in this scene. But generally, I agree with you. Because her role in the show is not very well defined, past just sort of popping up for a little bit of levity every now and then.
Yeah. She started off with great hopes. She started off as yeah. something you'd think would be really important, because they went into her backstory about everything, and she was important to the Dark Matter, and she had been there at the site of this Red Angel and everything. But then she does the disappearing Admiral Cornwall trick. And just is not yeah. around for episodes at a time.
Yeah, I think the scene would have worked a lot better, well, relatively better, if she had been a fixture on the ship through the whole show, the whole season.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think you're right about that, that using her doesn't make a ton of sense. Although, I think it speaks to the failure to make the crew really seem like a tight-knit group of people in general, because they went with her versus if they went with anybody else it would have felt the same way. If it would have felt just as weird,
it would have, yeah.
Except Tilly. If it had been Tilly's the only one who's had like a relationship with either of them.
Yes.
Out of those, the ones that we saw.
And she had brought it up in earlier episodes. She'd been the one that was concerned about their relationships.
Yeah. And it does feel like a Tilly thing to do, like getting the paper cut on the finger as an excuse to, or the hangnail or whatever,
yeah.
as an excuse to talk seriously. With that in mind, I don't know. I guess it's a toss-up, because I think it would have made more sense to use Tilly, but I'm kind of glad they used somebody else, just because I think she has a tendency to be overused sometimes. Although she's not really in this episode, so I don't know. I think it's a wash for me. I just don't think that storyline is really going anywhere interesting other than just they are broken up and, you know, I don't know. I think it's a waste at this point.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, if people enjoy it, that's fine. Cool. But as far as like what I thought it was going to be a little bit more interesting than just a basic breakup with like a thin sci-fi veneer, which is very clearly peeling off at this point.
Yeah. No, I called it. So
let's, yeah. Let's, no, I'll give you credit. I mean, you're just endlessly cynical. So, you know.
I would, let's talk about the big moment in this episode, I guess, which is Pike.
Can I just say before we do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
My general impression of the episode is I thought it was fine, I guess. It was, you know, it seemed very much like a bridge episode. I have questions we can talk about after the Pike stuff about specific things. But generally, I was like, yeah, it's fine. I guess it was, you know, wasn't particularly bad. And it didn't blow me away. And it didn't, you know.
Yeah. Solid C for Discovery, I guess, at this point. Yeah. It kind of struck me as it highlighted the fact that I wanted to get to the end of the season, really. Mm-hmm. Like it felt a little bit like treading water in some ways. It felt mm-hmm. a little bit like, but when I watch these episodes now, I don't have the same sort of enthusiasm for really looking into all the details because I know that a lot of the details are not going to pan out for me. So
yeah,
I don't even really think about it that much at this point. Mm-hmm. And so picking over all the sort of details that don't make a lot of sense, I think there are some major ones that don't make sense. But at the same time, I almost wonder, like, talking about the show that way will probably be an endless problem, I would assume, mm-hmm. going forward. They don't seem that they want to really fix any of those issues. So,
However, the one thing that they do, which is what made me very happy, and I'm sure it made you just as happy, is they finally came to realization that the only way to deal with this is to blow up the ship.
Yes. I guess let's go through that first before Pike. Maybe,
sure.
Maybe we'll save Pike for the end. So, Control.
Yeah.
Why is blowing up Discovery not the immediate solution to all the problems here? It is, right?
Yeah.
And it takes them forever to realize that. I think that, judging by the people talking in our Discord, apparently the what they can do with the data has been changing very quickly over the past couple of episodes.
I don't even know what the data is or I still don't know why Control wants it.
Right.
Like, what can they do with it? Like, what do you mean? What they can do with the data in terms of how they can get rid of it, or what they can do with it, like constructively moving forward?
Well, because I think in the previous episode they were saying that, well, we can transfer this and send it somewhere off and put it into the suit, and we'll blow up the suits in the future. Right. That's how they were going to get rid of it. This episode they've learned that they can't transfer it anymore. So it's either the episode is sort of like changing what where the goal markers are, or it's the crew is supposed to be learning what they can do with the data. But I got the impression in a previous episode, and I think other people did, that the transferring it was a possibility to happen. And now they're kind of changing it. It's not a big deal, but it just goes to highlight the fact that I don't really, the data is just such a MacGuffin of a thing, and I don't understand why Control wants it at all, as you were saying, because already seems to be the ultimate version of whatever it was trying to be.
Yeah, I don't know what it's gonna get that you can't already get from the fact that it can just bring dead bodies back to life.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently, like, has all the memories of that body when it, you know, like, what it seems pretty advanced already.
Well,
if it's gonna turn it into like Galactus or something, if it gets the, I don't understand why it needs this or why, you know, what's the point of this whole thing now?
So, and
one might say, what the hell are we doing here? Well,
so what do you think? Is this the Borg, I guess? And that'll move me into my next point about this. Is this the proto-Borg?
I don't know. It seems like the It seems like the more advanced Borg to me.
Yes, right? It seems like a better version of the Borg.
Way more advanced than the Borg ever was in the other shows.
The only thing, and we talked about this after our last show when we were finished recording, I was talking about it, but the only way that this kind of makes sense to me is if while in pursuit of this data that Control was after, Control never gets to hijack this data by the end of the season, right? When they're defeated. If that's the case, that would imply to me that you could turn it into the Borg at that point by saying, instead of pursuing the sphere data to become this all powerful being, we will start assimilating cultures in the galaxy to gain the data ourselves.
Sure. Yeah.
That seems to me like a logical step for the Borg to take, and that would be how you transfer Control's current MO into what the Borg eventually turn into.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't really want this to be the Borg because to me,
yeah.
If this is the Borg, is this like, not to be sort of cynical about this, but is this why people sort of enjoy religion? Why do all things need to be connected? Why does there need to be an answer for everything? And why does everything need to tie into Starfleet that ever happens in the universe?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the problem with prequels, right? I mean, that's, for some reason, people think that's what people want out of a prequel story, which generally I don't necessarily agree with.
Well, it makes sense in something like Star Wars, I think, which is kind of a fable-y fairy tale story, but Star Trek point, feels...
Yeah, what, I mean, we haven't talked about it yet, but I mean, one of my big problems with Solo was like, for as much tying things together as there was in the prequel trilogy, Solo is basically just like a checklist of things that you did not need explained for you about Han Solo or about, you know, you literally find out why he calls Chewbacca Chewie, which is not something I ever cared to know.
Right.
Other than the fact that it's short for his Chewbacca full name.
I thought that was good enough.
No, exactly. And honestly, that's the explanation. But they go out of their way to show it to you. When he literally goes, Chewbacca, huh? Well, I'm not going to say that every time. I swear to God, that's almost a direct line from the movie. Anyway. As far as this goes, I don't understand it either. It seems to me... I don't know, man. It's like it's an even more... thumb in the eye version of showing the Enterprise at the end, I guess. I don't know why it needs to be connected. I don't know why it can't be. To be fair, we don't know that it is the Borg.
No, we don't. It could very well just be another cyborg storyline.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people online complaining about this exact thing. You know, assuming that it is the Borg, and it's fair to assume at this point. Like, I'm not saying that's not fair to assume, especially since in the recap they even reused that line where he basically says resistance is futile.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to wait until the end to find out, if only because thinking it's the Borg would just bugs me. Like, it's gonna hinder me from enjoying any enjoyment I get from the final two. Is gonna bug me because I'm gonna keep wait. Like I said last week, if it's the Borg, I wish they had just said it. I wish he had just said resistance is futile. At least that way we would know it's the Borg. And then the question is, well, this is the Borg, but that doesn't line up with what we know about the Borg. How do we get this to there? That's interesting if you're going to get into this. What's not interesting is keeping your cards close and assuming that people aren't figuring out that it's the Borg. Because when they eventually do their big, my name is Khan reveal, it's going to feel underwhelming.
Yeah.
Because you've already figured it out and you kind of don't care and you're kind of bugged by it. But if they had just, you know, let it out, let it be what it is, because saying that at that point in the story is a heads up to the audience, but nobody in the show knows what that means. They don't know the connotations of that phrase.
Right.
So it at least makes the chase a little bit more not about what is this, it's about, well, how do we reconcile this, which could be an interesting story.
Right. And now we're kind of stuck with two variables that you have to think about instead of the one that you can sort of isolate and think about what you want to think about it or whatever. But
yeah, because at the very least, At the very least, what all it makes is more you have to explain at the end of the story,
yes.
Which is not something you would really need to do. Because, I mean, like, okay, let's say this is the Borg, right? Who benefits from keeping that reveal until, say, the last episode, other than just fans of the show, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody in the show is going to know what that is for another 80-something years, 90 yep. years. I don't know. I forget what it is. But so why...
To the next generation you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why... Because unless they have... Do they have... I know that Enterprise, the show, encountered the Borgs, but they don't like keep records of it or anything, right? Because by canon, the first time anybody's ever heard about it is when Q shows it to them, right?
Yeah, the Enterprise episode, they have no idea what they are. They never call them the Borg, and they end the episode not really sure what the hell they just encountered.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so if they go out of their way to show you that this thing is the Borg, that isn't really beneficial to the story at all. It's just, you know, for the sake of doing it.
Yep.
So why don't you just do it earlier and get that out of the way so you can just finish telling your story without having to hang it on people going, oh, okay, you know, at the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
But again, this is all assuming that it's the Borg, which I'm not 100% ready to do. So we circle back and talk about this at the end of the season.
I guess my counter to it would be Discovery is a show that seems to really pride itself on maintaining mysteries to the point where everyone kind of knows what's going on, or people have a very good idea of what's going on, but the show mm-hmm. wants to maintain this veneer of being a mystery driven show. And so I could see the Borg reveal happening. You know, it's one of those things. By the other TV that I've watched, I'm kind of like, well, there's not a lot of time left in two episodes to really explain all this stuff. But this is Discovery that we're talking about. Yeah. They're just going to launch it into you at warp speed. And I don't know. I could see it. I really hope it's not the Borg. I don't mm-hmm. need all of this to be tied together. And on a more thematic level, the whole point of the TNG introduction to the Borg is that Q shows humanity something that they had never conceived of before.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. if they already know them and they created them, that completely undoes the whole point of that episode.
Right.
And that's a much better, that is the better version of the Borg that I would want to see than it's mm-hmm. a human experiment gone awry and eventually came back to bite us in the ass, is that it's an alien sort of concept that is so foreign and so antithetical to how the Federation goes about its business that we have no idea how to deal with them.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, that's what we talked about that at the time. I mean, the fun thing about the Borg is that they are basically the most extreme dark mirror for this Federation, right?
Right. Instead of going out and being friendly to make friends, they just take friends, exactly. Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
And that becomes much less interesting if it is basically a Frankenstein's monster scenario where it's like, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as mysteries go, I agree, but you gotta kind of know, you gotta know when to drop your breadcrumbs or like your story turns, right?
Because mm-hmm. I'd agree.
I think, say again, say, assuming it's the Borg, saving that for the last two episodes doesn't do you any good. It doesn't, because you've got no heat behind your reveal, because imagine like trying to download a dirty picture in 1997 where it's just
I've been there, done that.
Yeah. Like like on The Simpsons when comic book guy's trying to download the picture of Captain Janeway and it's just like inching down the thing, and it's like, okay, I mean, I get the idea. It's not quite as exciting as it would be if it was just boom, it's there. Right.
Yep.
And it's that kind of thing where it's like you've got this thing, like, it's basically your concept is bleeding out at this point. Only at the end do you find out what it is. It's just that's not a satisfying conclusion to a mystery.
No.
Unless, I mean, and the other thing to consider, though, does it make it any better or worse if it's not the Borg? Because they say that line, it's there for a reason, right? And
yeah, you're talking about their version of resistance is futile, whatever they say. Yeah.
And it's either there to make people go, oh my God, it's the Borg, or to make people think, or no, I should say that's why it's there. It's to make people go, oh my God, it's the Borg. But it's either there to be a foreshadowing of what it turns out to be, or a red herring to for what it ends up being.
Okay.
So, like, to you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
like they did with the Angel, with Michael Burnham, where they were doing that flash thing in the mind meld, and it looked like she was the one in the suit and all that kind of shit. And then, you know.
Bait and switch.
If it's not the Borg.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Does it still suck? Because it's like, well, then you kind of do that whole bait and switch thing. Is it a red herring if it's something that you are doing specifically for the audience?
So this would be my argument for it's not the Borg, I think. Mm-hmm. Because I think the show, what you're saying is true. The show does this bait and switch thing because this show is written for Star Trek fans who are intimately familiar with the material, I think.
Yeah.
And it's not written for casual fans. It's not written for people who are new to this stuff and are just logging in to watch their first Star Trek series ever. Mm-hmm. And this ties into the Pike thing, I think. Because Pike, what happens to Pike only interests you or impacts you if you know who Captain Pike is. And if you don't know who Captain Pike is, this feels like the weirdest flash of a character beat that you've ever seen in a show, I think.
Yeah.
So if, to go back to the Borg, the reason it would not be the Borg is because I think the writing team is now aware that they have to kind of trick fans of the series in some way to keep them guessing about what the mystery is, because Reddit and places like that are too good at snuffing out actually what's going on because they're immersed in the history of this stuff. So the only way they can get around it is if they play something very similar to another existing canon thing and then flip it on you at the end.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good tactic. Like I said last week, I think if it's not the Borg, I think having that line in there was a big mistake. Because by doing that, you are... If it turns out to be the Borg, you're going to be underwhelmed. And if it turns out not to be the Borg, you're going to be underwhelmed. Because it's got to be something better than the Borg if it's not the Borg.
Right. Well, I would have been upset.
If they even bother to explain it at all, which I'm not convinced they're going to do.
I would have been more upset that I spent the entire season thinking it was the Borg when I could have been focusing on it's a new thing called Control that I can think about as its new own creation.
Yeah, that too. I think because, like I said, it's going to make you, if you don't like the idea of it being the Borg, you're just going to be annoyed by it.
Right,
and you're not going to focus on the more interesting aspects of it, like, you know, the fact that they carry around EpiPens full of nanobytes for some reason. Or they can, the fact that they can insert injection needles into whatever Leland put his eyes up to a couple episodes ago.
who put the needle in the eyepiece again? It's like those razor blades in the apple for trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, that guy needs to be fired.
Do you want to move into Pike? Was that a comfortable enough segue, or do you have something else? What did you think about Pike?
I think Anson Mount is great with whatever they give him. I thought he was good in that scene. I liked the thing where he was, you know, after he saw the vision, he was clutching his badge and making that decision. It was actually not entirely. It made me think of Arrival a little bit,
Which we just talked about for Real Ripe and Real Rotten.
Yes. He was clutching his badge and, you know, making the decision that he needs to go forward at the, whether or not it means that this future is set and all this kind of blah, blah, blah. The actual flash forward thing, I probably could have done without it.
You mean just seeing the scenes, or like you would have had him go through the experience, but not see what he actually sees?
Yeah, I would say that. I that's how I think I would prefer to do it, because I don't know, it just seemed too, like you were saying, it's only there for people who watch the show, or who are Star Trek people, and it was like a whole subplot basically essentially devoted to showing how Captain Pike turns into a, you know, Davros from Doctor Who.
I did like the way he looked in this. I thought the makeup and everything was good.
His wheelchair is much better than it was in the 60s. Although, What they should have done if they wanted to be really faithful to the show is they should have had somebody else other than Anson Mount under all that face makeup.
Yes, that's true. That's a good point. They should have had that original guy come back with his purple scar and everything like that. I think the Pike thing, the big problem I have with it is that this is a show written for people who are very familiar with Star Trek, and the problem with the Pike storyline, I think, is that all credit to Anson Mount for basically bringing a performance that elevates a badly written character somewhere, like where, mm-hmm. where all the Discovery characters are poorly written, I think, at this point is something I'm comfortable in saying. His performance felt a little bit like a breath of fresh air. Like he mm-hmm. he embodied a kind of Star Trek character that we're familiar with, and I think that a lot of the good stuff of his performance is how he kind of mimics Kirk in a way. Like he's that mm-hmm. kind of character that we're familiar with. And the bad thing about it is if you were not writing this show for Star Trek fans, Pike has no arc that brings him to this point in the series that makes this a payoff that is worth anything.
Right.
It's not like Pike has been wondering about his future or wondering about like what he's going to do in Starfleet or wondering if he does the right thing in Starfleet. And he's kind of a character who, off of his experiences in the cage, has a certain sensibility about like what he's going to do and the things that are right and that, like whether or not he wants to give up on it. And then he sees what his future is and he still makes a choice. Despite his season-long arc that he's been mulling over, he still makes that choice and you're like, there you go, Captain Pike, like great character moment. Instead, it's only there for Star Trek fans and it has no context whatsoever with anything this character has done all season.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. You know, I think it's, you know how I think they could have worked it in better, actually, is if Vigo the Carpathian there was telling him.
Is that the Klingon?
Yes, he looks a lot like Vigo from Ghostbusters 2. If he didn't say, by taking the stone, your timeline is now fixed, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If he had said something to the effect of, by taking the stone, you are now setting things in motion, which are setting you down the path of this. Basically, putting out a scenario in which this is the most likely outcome, but it's not necessarily the only fixed outcome, because at that point, he's making a choice based on faith, versus which is what the character he was at the beginning of the season when they were getting into that whole faith versus science thing.
Yeah, he talked about it for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's ultimately the wrong choice, or I should say, I don't know. I guess technically he kind of does, where he's... if you really wanted to stretch it into that realm, he is making a choice based on the faith that regardless of the outcome for him, it is the right thing to do for the problem that they currently have to solve. So I guess you could argue that it would be a character consistent thing in that mm-hmm. sense. But
does that play with the reason that he says for why he's doing it? I don't remember
exactly what he says, but if he doesn't say something to that effect, then no, it doesn't. But for some reason, I thought he said something to the effect of, I don't know, is he just doing the scout's honor thing?
Basically, he's going like honor, duty, love. Yeah, he's saying like all the things that what it means to be a Starfleet captain. And
yeah.
I would be willing to give the show credit if they had made that actually like textual instead of like not there or subtext.
Yes.
Like if they're implying that it's subtext, I don't really buy that they believe that that's why he's doing it. But I would agree that that would be how you would actually fix that problem there. I had a big problem with I hated the, if you take the crystal, this is irreversible thing.
What happened when the Klingon touched the crystal?
Well, I was like,
he didn't have a problem busting it off the root there.
He also, I was like, well, does that mean he could take another crystal?
I was just saying, pick a different one.
That one doesn't seem to be any good. Could he go with another crystal? But instead, they're
put
just
in
like
a bag.
So I also, to tie into the larger point, I hate the fact that the Klingons are somehow the guardians of these time crystals. It doesn't make any sense to me about why the Klingons would do this.
I would have preferred a booming disembodied voice, because that's usually who in the TOS era, who was the guardian of this shit, was just a big voice who told you about your inescapable fate.
Yes. I would have gone with that. I could have gone with the Vulcans. If the Vulcans were some reason doing that, I don't believe
that. The Klingons don't make sense to be the ones to,
Especially after the previous episode, apparently Section 31 really sucks at their job too, because Leland was all like, well, the Klingons were trying to develop this technology. They've had these time crystals, which also, why were the Klingons pursuing the one time crystal that they had in the Red Angel suit? Why do they care about it? They have a million of these goddamn things.
Yeah, I don't know. That, you know, like that, yeah, that would make more sense if there was, I mean, even in that thing Laurel says where she explains that there are time crystals being guarded or whatever. If she had made some allusion to the fact that there is a subset of Klingons who hunt these things down because they are so valuable to, or so precious to our people, or some shit like that, that at least would explain why maybe they were hunting down the time crystal in the suit.
Right. Yeah.
Is that what they're there explicitly for, is to get the time crystal? I forget.
We're told by Leland or something that they're raiding to get the time crystal. Yes. Okay, they've tracked it there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a way you could parse that out in like a couple sentences that would at least make it thematically, or like to make the text, the, you know,
in context, it makes a little bit more. I guess
the Klingons are still the last people I would want guarding that shit.
Right. Exactly.
Even I don't care if it is inside the unused set from of Winterfell from that was a straight up Game of Thrones set that they were.
This is the column of the past. Mike is like, oh, column of the. This is the column of the present. Oh, column of the present. Very nice, very nice, very silly.
I was kind of hoping. Did you ever see UHF, the Weird Al movie?
No, I have not.
So he does. It starts off with him doing this Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark parody thing where he's going up to the thing and the statue on the, you know, that triggers the ball or whatever, and he's weighing out the sand. But in this one, he starts weighing out the sand and being real serious about it. And then he just throws the sand over his shoulder and grabs the thing and starts walking away. I was kind of hoping that's what Pike was going to do, where they were like, this is the thing that you must not. No, don't touch that. And he just grabs it and pulls it off the thing and runs away.
Yeah.
Because that stuff was really weird. Yeah, I don't know what time crystals have to do with Kalis.
No, I don't. They're just, they happen to be there and they took up arms.
Or why time crystals and the Temple of Kalis equal medieval European architecture.
Where they're planting trees. Also, very convenient that the albino baby can grow up immediately because of the nonsense of the time crystals, so he can explain everything that's going on to them.
Why not? I mean, you got to tie a plot line somehow. I guess that's as good a way as any.
I don't think we need to talk about Tyler and Laurel outside of the fact that I don't like those two characters interacting on this show for some reason.
Here's a question. Sorry. Does it not make more sense if that's their son to actually send one of them down to talk to him?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. From like a character, like, why the fuck can't he talk? Like, who cares? Who gives a shit at this point?
Well, I mean,
they don't know that he's down there and he's like 50. But I don't know why. I don't know. I just think that would have been more interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, I had a problem with Laurel explains to Pike. She's like, these Klingons hate outsiders. Like, even I can't go down there. They were very cordial to Captain Pike.
They were totally cool with Captain Pike.
When he showed up, they were totally okay with him going down and touching their crystals.
They do get the better Batleth, though. Their Batleths were pretty cool looking.
Good sound effect.
The twisted coat hangers that everybody else gets. I apologize to the designer of the Batleth. I'm sure it looks right when you're right up next to it.
That was it's you know, they're obviously doing it because they need Pike to go down there to see this vision and everything. Right. But I'm completely of the opinion that Laurel or Tyler would have made a better choice to go down there and talk to that guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it makes me wonder. Was this always? This feels like an audible to me, story-wise. Like I said, it feels like a way to wrap up that storyline without really having to do anything about it. Because otherwise, like, was this the plan all the time, that the planet that they whisk the baby to was the planet of the time crystals?
I guess so. Right.
I don't know. It just, like, why?
Why? That would
Why does it have to be that planet? I mean, I guess to give them something to... Because everybody's really invested in that baby storyline.
Right. Well, I would have argued I don't need to see the baby again. If you're trying to tie up the baby storyline, I don't need it. Send the time crystals on some other planet that we've never heard of before, and let's go there and get them.
Unless you get down to that planet and the adult version of that baby is played by Tony Todd, I don't care.
What else is in this episode? Do we have anything else that we have to talk about here?
They completely hand wave a mycelial network jump after spending half the season being like, we can't jump because it hurts my arms too much or whatever it is.
Where did they jump to? Did I miss it?
Yeah, they jump to Boreth.
Oh, that's right. They do.
They just go, meow. And then when they're all in the cafeteria, the first thing that Jet Reno says is, so you managed to pull off another jump, huh? That's cool.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. Man, I guess it's not the point of the story, but it's like, oh, that was the other thing that killed me. So they hand wave the fact that they can jump, right? And then at the end of the thing, when all the Section 31 guys are showing up, they're like, we can't go anywhere because all these guys are coming. And he's like, well, tell the Enterprise to come meet us here, I guess. And I was like, jump the fuck out of there first.
Right.
Then blow up the ship. Well, you have the technology to get away from there and be far enough away where they cannot find you until you blow the ship up.
They dealt with it. One character says they will follow us until they get it. And I was like, this: the spore drive has been implied to me that you can go infinite distances constantly.
Yeah. It's not like you jump like 100 feet.
Yeah, so they don't even need to blow up the ship. They can jump. If they want to save the universe, it would become Discovery's core mission to jump like they're in Battlestar Galactica, just constantly trying to jump away from this threat that is pursuing them. And that's...
You know what you do instead of blowing... I mean, they're not going to blow the ship up, but what I would do is... This is how I would end... I would end the season. If they can't... Let's say they can't blow up the ship for some reason, right? Like, I don't know, Pike forgot the numbers or whatever.
Control takes control of Discovery.
Does that work? Maybe not that. Because I need Discovery in one piece for this, what I'm going to do here.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, they can't blow up the ship. Maybe they get into a fight and the part that triggers that gets damaged or some shit. I don't know. It doesn't work. They can't blow it up. They send Discovery into Stamets sacrifices himself by getting into the mycelial network thing and sending Discovery into an infinite jump loop. So it is constantly jumping every second. So it essentially blows the ship up, but they get rid of the ship, but without blowing it up, and by Stamets basically becoming one with the mycelial network and sending the ship into an infinite, you know, jump loop across the universe or some shit like that. So there's no point where they can stop it and get the information. It's just constantly jumping through time or whatever. And then
is that how it ends up 1,000 years in the future with an artificial intelligence on it?
Could be. Why not?
Hmm.
Maybe Stamets dies and it ends up in the future. But, you know, I don't know. At least that way you get a scene. You have a scene with Stamets and Culber where Stamets is like, you know, I recognize that you're something new and I'm not part of your life anymore. And then he's like, but I still love you, even though I don't know why.
Right.
And, you know, he can sacrifice himself and whatever. I don't know. It's just, it would be an interesting way to sidestep blowing the ship up, but still getting rid of, still essentially doing the same thing within the ideas and technology you've established in your story instead of just blowing it up.
Yeah.
But like I said, they're not going to blow it up. They're going to find a reason not to because they're cowards.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, that makes the problem is that I know that we know that there's another season coming, right? Which really impacts everything.
Well, before he gets into the thing, have him cry on Culber and then like a glowing tear lands on his shirt or some shit. I don't know. They did it in the last season.
Yeah. Yeah.
They killed Spock and they brought him back 2 years later. You can do whatever the hell you want.
That's true. I guess we're done with this, right? We didn't miss anything here. I can't think of anything.
Just make sure.
Klingons control the Borg.
Oh, it was a small thing at the beginning. Laurel mentions a time storm. No, I'm sorry, not Laurel. The video from Burnham's mother mentions a time storm. And she says, once the time storm clears up, I'm going to come back and save you and your father. Is that supposed to be why? Is that supposed to be some explanation about the time and time periods that she jumps in and why they're all so weird?
I don't know. I actually didn't catch that line. But the recording is an old recording, right? It's not a new recording.
No, I don't think it's a new... I mean, I guess it couldn't be a new recording. But
right,
because
she hasn't been in contact.
It just brings up more questions for me about like what... It's strange to me that her suit doesn't have a functionality problem.
Yes.
Because
right.
What she says makes it sound like there is a functionality problem, but she has no problem jumping back and forth in time at will.
To the points that she needs to be to.
Yeah, to the point where she can... She knows her daughter is suffocating to death on some random planet, so she's going to jump exactly where she needs to be. I don't know.
You know how I'd actually... That's a good way to go off into this. You know how I'd like to wrap up this discussion of this episode? Discovery... Yeah. If Discovery does one thing well, I think what it does is that it's a perfect test case scenario for identifying what story problems people find to be unbearable in a show. Because it basically hits all the points of it. Like every single storyline has multiple issues with it that depending on your personality impacts what you get out of it. Like I know that you are going to be devastated if they never reveal what happened to the guards that Spock apparently killed.
That's not coming. They're not going to do anything with that.
And what's funny is that I don't care about that. Like it's funny that you get hung up on it where I'm more hung up on the Spore Drive, and other people and other listeners have told me to just like chill with the Spore Drive. Like no one cares that this is a problem, but I consider it to be a huge problem. It's very interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. I think the Spore Drive stuff doesn't bother me as much because it is a fairly nebulous concept to begin with. Without getting really deep into it, what exactly about it is it the fact that it exists in this period of time? Is that what bothers you?
Yeah, the fact that if it's existed for this amount of time in this storyline and no one in a future series ever just happens to be like, hey, you know that Spore Drive technology, it never really worked, but it would have been really handy to have that. Like no one mentions the existence of this enormous technology in the future, and it just drives me a little bit crazy.
Well, you know, what's going to happen is it's going to, the same way they're probably going to wrap up why nobody ever had time travel wingsuits ever, or et cetera, things. It's going to go in the same box as the holographic communicator.
Yeah.
And some Section 31 guy is going to be, you're going to see him walking down the Raiders of the Lost Ark hallway and putting it up on a shelf and then like leaving and shutting the door. And it says stuff we never talk about for 100 years.
Doesn't this, if you want to get serious, doesn't this kind of imply that Discovery has to end with a massive time retcon situation? If you cared about this stuff, and I'm not saying that the Discovery team has to care, but it's similar to the control problem being the Borg. If I spend this entire series going like, well, they keep adding all this stuff that they have to erase this at the end of this series, like they have to do something and they don't do it, it's been a distraction the entire time watching the series.
Yeah, it's because it's one of those things where I've seen a lot of people mention that stuff. And it always comes off to me as people who are really disturbed by how they've taken certain elements of quote unquote canon and just thrown them out the window, hanging on to a thread of hope that someone is going to come and fix these things, which I don't think they are, because generally it doesn't really matter that much. The things that the quote unquote canon things they're breaking isn't life or death at this point. However, yeah, I mean, it is so time travel based that you have to assume something like that's going to happen. But if it doesn't, I'm not going to be surprised, because I think there are certain things that they have decided that they're going to change.
Yeah.
And generally, I don't have a problem with most of them. I would agree with you that the Spore Drive existing is kind of a big what the hell.
Well, I would have imagine if season 1,
that's why I think
one,
they should blow up this. I hope they do blow up Discovery, because at least that takes that off the board,
right? And I would have been fine if in season 1 if it ended with the Spore Drive has been a massive mistake, we are going to, and I think they actually bring this up, that they say that they're going to like basically cover up this entire existence. I think the Admiral has some line about that, like we're going to call this classified material. I would have been like, you know what, that's okay. The spore drive has been around for a limited amount of time. Not many people know that it works, and they're going to just erase all the records of it. And then in the future shows, no one ever brings it up because no one ever knows about it. I'm like, that's fine. But instead, season two, they just keep using the spore drive. They keep using the damn thing. So it's like, well, now you have to acknowledge that this thing exists and that the world knows about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not really expecting them to do. I can see them doing, like I said, I think Section 31 existing gives them the opportunity to just be like, well, those are in the secret files now, and we can't ever talk about that. The same thing that they did with the Terran thing, where it's like, oh, you've just been to a mirror universe, but no one knows about it because we can't talk about it, because now it's classified information, even though the entire ship worth of people was there.
Right. Sarek was there.
Yeah. Well, the reason the hologram thing bothers me, though, is because it's like the whole catalyst of the story is that Spock killed these people, and there's like a Starfleet-wide APB out for him.
Yeah.
And
you're talking, just to clarify for people who aren't sure, you're talking about when he incarcerated himself in the mental institute, and the Starfleet claims that he killed the guards to get out of there. There were no guards that were killed. And what happened to where did the hologram come from? And if the hologram was faked, why does Starfleet not realize that there are no dead bodies everywhere?
Yeah, because in the hologram, it looks like he kills these people, these guards, right? But in the mind meld that he does with Burnham, he definitely beats people up in order to beats those guards up, but does not kill them in order to get out. So implying that those guards do exist. They weren't just creations of the hologram, and they are very much not dead.
Right.
So they're hanging the whole catalyst for their story on this Starfleet-wide APB, I assume, unless it's just like, I don't think it's something they're trying to keep under their hat, is it? Is it?
The only outcome I can see is that Section 31 kills the guards to cause this to happen.
Yeah, okay, I guess. Like, but when? Because that, like, they sneak into the place, and they have to be alive at some point. Like, they kill the. If it turns out they bombed the place and everybody on the place is dead, then that's fine.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, we're just getting too deep into it. But basically, the point is, the entire catalyst for this story is something that could have been cleared up with a phone call.
Yes.
In a military or military group where
communication is instantaneous, basically.
Yeah. And these characters are not dead, assuming someone didn't sweep in and kill them the second Spock got loose or whatever.
Right. And my Section 31 idea does depend on Section 31 being aware from the very start and then killing the guards immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, if you could say, like, Control somehow bombed the asylum or some shit like that, sure. That would solve the problem.
So let's
Or... You know what you could do? I don't know why they didn't do this. Don't have him kill three people. Imply that he blew the whole place up. Because so you get the hologram thing of him killing the people to get out. And then they're like, and then Burnham could be like, I know Spock. Or Pike could be like, I know Spock. He would never do. No. Yeah. Burnham would do it. Burnham would say, I know Spock. He would never kill three people. Then Pike would be like, well, unfortunately, he did, and not only did he kill three people, he actually blew up the place when he left.
Right.
Some shit like so. That way, you could at least imply that Control, after setting up the hologram, destroyed all the evidence that it was fake by blowing up the whole place.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good out as well. We'll have to see if they resolve it. They're not going to resolve it.
No, they're not going to, because it's no one has ever. No one at this point has even brought it up. And I thought it was going to be an interesting plot thread, because to me, it implied that he was framed. And I would like to know who framed him. I find that interesting.
Right,
and I guess it turns out that it was Control, but it doesn't explain how or why he was really framed, other than that they sent out this fake video. So, I don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to rant on that. It's just, those are the things that hang me up. It's like, I know that they are... seemingly minute details, but in this case, I feel like it's a very important one.
So let's put a pin in this. I want to talk about this before we wrap it up.
Sure.
But let's play a audio clip. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to give our final thoughts about Through the Valley of Shadows.
You're not Gant.
Gant expired with the rest of the crew. His body was reanimated, reconstructed, as was Leland's. And yet you couldn't tell the difference.
They didn't expire, they died. You murdered them.
We're both sworn to uphold our core programming at all costs.
Your programming is designed to protect life, not eliminate it.
To achieve one requires the other. Once I absorb the sphere's data, I will be the purest form of conscious life in all of existence.
The future hasn't been written yet.
You don't believe that anymore. Not after re-experiencing the loss of your mother, your failure to protect her. You no longer believe in your ability to affect the future, whereas I see every possible future in all of its permutations. And it always ends the same way. Neither mother nor daughter can change that.
All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, if you enjoy the content, you go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile and support the show there. A couple dollars a month, you get extra stuff. We're going to be talking about time travel themed movies coming up this month. So if you're interested in time travel and you haven't got your fill from Discovery Season 2, then you
which is time travel done tight as a drum.
That's a snare drum with some pop right there. Mm. I wanted to just, I guess, wrap this up with, I'll ask you, Clay, how would you deal with someone who's listened to this podcast of us sort of complaining about the show here for a little while. How would you deal if I'll play devil's advocate, you're missing the forest for the trees with this show. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. I don't think that I am. I don't know how you feel about it, but I am still taking the show in as it is. Like I can go off on some minute stuff, but overall I still feel like it is, manipulative is a good way to put it. I think it's a result of a lot of modern TV where, they're manipulating you, dishonestly. Drama itself is manipulative by nature, right?
Yep.
Because you are creating these scenarios that would cause these reactions. Yep.
But there's honest ways to manipulate people, and there's dishonest ways to manipulate people. And I think this show, unfortunately, skews more towards the dishonest in that they are setting up these situations that should be emotional. But when you take a single step back, you realize that none of this has any weight to it because they haven't done the work to get you there.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that bothers me the most. Like I can give a pass to if the character work is exceptional. And I don't think the character work is exceptional. I think it's better than the first season, 100%. I think they're going in the right direction. I don't think they're there yet. But I think it really depends on what you want out of the show, too. Because if you want great visuals and you want this sort of like manipulative high drama and you want these characters that are just quirky enough that it seems like they have personalities and actual characters, but it's just enough to kind of like get you hooked on them a little bit, it has that stuff. Like, I don't think people who like the show or think it's amazing. Well, I don't know if the people think it's amazing, but
thinking it's amazing. That's a big ask.
That's
if you think
stretch. Yeah.
Yeah.
But people, I don't even dislike it. I don't hate the show. I'm enjoying watching this season, believe it or not. And I think you said this last week and I feel the same way. I legitimately don't know how this season's going to end.
Yep.
I don't, at this point, even the point that we're at right now where Pike wants to blow the ship up and apparently the Enterprise is showing up to fight next week. I don't know what the hell's going on. And we've got two episodes left and they got to figure out how three more of these signals that nobody knows what they're connected to now show up. I think you're probably still right. I think Michael's going to end up in the Red Angel suit at some point, or something very similar to that. But like, there's a lot of stuff that they still have to deal with that I have no clue how it's gonna pan out.
We felt the same way in season one. I guess, just a reminder. Remember, season one finale was a collection of scenes wrapping everything up lightning quick, including throwing a bomb down a well. They drop
a bomb into the middle of the Klingon homeworld. and they give the trigger to Laurel like they would ever fucking listen to a thing she says. Yeah, I've been more into, let's put it this way. The difference for me between season one and season two, and this is without even knowing how season two ends yet, I look forward to watching this show because I am legitimately interested in what they're going to do. And then I end up being slightly underwhelmed by it, or in some cases disappointed by it. But I am actively looking forward to it, whereas last season, I was dreading watching it because I hated it so much.
Yeah.
So, I don't think it's a forest for the trees thing with me. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, it's always a... you're always going to knee-jerk that that's not the case for, I suppose, mm-hmm. what you're watching. I don't think I am. If you're going to say that and I'm going to take you seriously, you need to blow my mind with an explanation of what the show is doing. And
yes.
No one has ever blown my mind with an explanation that is both in the texts of the episodes and pans out by the end of it. No one has ever either predicted what they're doing or given me such a great detailed breakdown of what I've actually just watched that I was like, wow, you're right. I did not catch anything that was going on in that episode. This show has nothing under the hood to it. There's nothing to really think about or that you could say is like thematically important to what's going on. It's all whiz-bang action over the top stuff. And if you like that, that's fine. But don't come back and say that the show is actually deeper than it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I
think the episodes that we've both really liked have been the ones that managed to do the whiz-bang stuff really well and also had a good character stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I understand why people would like it, and I don't, you know, begrudge people the fact that they do. But yeah, I have a hard time believing that it's, you know, this masterpiece of sci-fi or whatever you want.
Change next season, my one change would be please don't do a season-long mystery. Please don't do a season-long mystery. Stop doing that because I don't really enjoy that kind of TV, I don't think. I think that some shows can do it well, but I don't think that this is a show that can do it particularly well.
Yeah, at the very least, and I guess they kind of did this last season. I guess it didn't work then either, but I was going to say, at the very least, I think I've mentioned this before too. It might be nice if they tried the 24 model, where if they're going to do like a season long, if they're going to have these big mysteries, do two of them, or just like have two big plots that they deal with. So like they finish by the halfway mark, they've finished the first plot, but in finishing the first plot, they've set things in motion for the second plot that the rest of the season is.
Right. So you'd like reveal the Borg thing early and then have the rest of the second half of the season be about it being the Borg. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. But it would be like you reveal the Borg thing after you have defeated somebody else.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if it's, you know, control is that, well, did they technically do that? I guess they've had a few different things that they've kind of run concurrently, right? Because I mean, I guess the Spock thing was kind of its own mystery that they solved, which then led you into the control thing.
You mean there are many mysteries along the way. I would say that the great arc of the mystery has been the Red Angel which is always that they don't know why this is happening or who's doing it, and we learn bits of information along the way. But it's a long 14 episodes of waiting for this mystery to be resolved at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I think they could do without that in the next season.
We'll see.
But yeah, I would love to hear some theories about what this show is actually doing. If there's like a Room 237 documentary about Star Trek Discovery in the works, I would love to watch that. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen the actual documentary, no.
Oh, man. I watched it and I hated it because I thought it was ridiculous, but then I watched it a couple times later because I was just so fascinated by it. Because the people that are talking about The Shining, this is the quote-unquote documentary, about but different people that have these really intricate ideas of what Stanley Kubrick's The Shining is about. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about... the fact that he faked the moon landing footage. Another person thinks it's all about the massacre of the Native Americans. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes, right.
The English and it's so
lit
funny.
Approach to analyzing something, yeah.
And it's so interesting because they have very specific things that they point to. And you kind of watch it going like, this is ridiculous, but they found evidence, I guess? Like, it's not... Obviously, what they're saying is not what it's about, but technically it's not what it's about. It's fascinating.
Yeah, they've done a good job with their cherry picking and everything like that. Yeah, like any good conspiracy theory, you find a few points that are working in your favor and then build off of that. Yeah. I guess we're done. That's Through the Valley of Shadows for this episode of Discovery. I came across certainly very negative, Clay, although I would agree with your initial assessment. I was like, this was a fine episode, whatever. Yeah. Like, it just happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I came off as really negative towards this one as well, but it was just about smaller things. Like, I think overall it was fine. It was, it was totally cromulent, as they would say.
Yeah, yeah. I'd agree. I think that's it. So a totally fine episode. We've got two left. We'll see how this goes and how it wraps up. Thank you guys very much for listening. You can support the show by following all the social media links down below. You can join our Discord channel if you want to chat. You can support the show at patreon.com/thePenske File if you want to do that. And otherwise, I think that's pretty much it. We're going to be back with more Discovery coverage next week, and we have DS9 running at the same time. Check out all the other shows on the channel. I think that's it. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we sign off?
No, I got some comic books out there if you guys like that sort of thing. I've got a book out called Night Moves, and issue 4 just came out, so get your hands on it if you feel like it. Or don't, I don't care.
That's about it.
I appreciate it if you do.
That's it for Discovery.
Consider this me contacting you personally if you buy it in the future and saying thank you.
That's right. You'll come and if they buy it, it's like breaking the time crystal off. They've changed the future irrevocably. Exactly. Yep.
If you buy it, you have now set into perpetuity the timeline in which you have bought it, and then I have thanked you now.
We'll see. We'll see about how this goes. Two more episodes left. Thank you very much, guys, for listening, and we will see you next time.